Hi, I'm Terry Griffith, and this is Bark Radio. Today we have a very special guest from Best Friends. We have John Dunn, who is their social media guru. Welcome to the show, John.
Thanks, Terry. I don't like guru, just for reference.
Okay, how about God?
Oh, come on, man. No, student. How about student?
Student. All right, student is good. Because, it's always a learning experience.
It is. If someone tells you they're a guru in social media, they're selling you snake oil. Run.
Well, you're at least resident expert in this conversation. How about that?
Fine.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about Best Friends. I think most of our listeners probably do know Best Friends. If they don't, I don't know where if they've been under a rock or what. But and then tell them a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I mean, Best Friends was started 25 years ago by a group of friends. We're located in Kanab, Utah, which is potentially about the most remote place you could ever start anything that you expect to have visitors come to, which has sort of been a blessing and a curse. And so 25 years ago, they started this sanctuary rescuing animals, and it's grown really just end over end, year after year. And here we are in our 26th year this year. We're about a $40 million organization now. We've got 2,000 animals at our sanctuary at any given time. We'll put about 600 through the sanctuary each year through our adoptions and then bringing more in. But we also do outreach work across the country. We do Pup My Ride rescues where we take throwaway dogs from puppy mills and get them out to rescue groups so they can find homes and don't have to live in those awful conditions anymore. We work very hard to change the perception of the pit bull, which is a very unfortunately maligned dog through no fault of its own. We do a great community cats program that encompasses feral cats and owned cats and, you know, just trying to actually change the idea that these cats, once a cat enters a shelter, it's some just – I can't remember the number, Terry. You might know better than I, but it's some awful number, like 85% never get out of a shelter if they get in.
Right.
So, you know, all of these things are really just designed at achieving no more homeless pets, which is our mission. And, you know, it feels good. Like, we feel like we're in a very good path towards that. We've got so many programs going on, also a blessing and a curse. And then we have 30,000 people come visit the sanctuary in southern Utah every year. About a third of those will stop and stay. So, of course, we welcome anyone to come and visit us if you're in the area. And even if you're not, you should plan a trip because even if you think, well, that sounds sort of cool for a day or two, but what else would I do? Well, it's right in the middle of National Park Heaven with Zion National Park about 30 miles away, the Grand Canyon 70 miles away. Lake Powell, 60 miles away, Bryce Canyon, 80 miles away, so you almost couldn't be in a better location. It is a bit of a trek to get to. I always sort of compare it probably inappropriately to sort of the animal mecca trip. You know, like people really make this like trek to come see us, and it's really great. We have obviously a lot of people that come back every year or certainly, more than once and spend several days with us, and that's really the lifeblood. I mean, we couldn't take care of 2,000 animals on our own, so volunteers are super important to us.
Well, it's something that's on my list to do. My wife and I talked about it. Next year, we're going when we hit the No More Homeless Pets conference, we're going to make sure we plan to extend our stay and go up to the sanctuary for a while because it's something I've always wanted to do. It's just the scheduling has never been there, so we're planning now for next year.
Awesome! You're going to love it. I mean, it really if you like animals, I mean if you volunteer at your local rescue organization or shelter, or if you work in rescue, you know, it is an incredibly inspiring place. It's the kind of place that really can kind of recharge your soul, for lack of a better way to say it. It's a very special place. You know, it's really the heart of what we do and who we are. And then, of course, we have all the outreach work across the country, saving animals, supporting local rescues, really trying to do whatever we can to help communities across America, you know, achieve that No More Homeless Pet status.
Yeah, and hopefully in a few years we'll be there. A lot of people working hard towards that.
I think it's certainly in my lifetime. I've got hopefully a few years left in my lifetime by the time we get there. It's such a difference in awareness now to when the organization started 26 years ago. The adopt message, which seems like it's all we ever talk about, it's out there and people are getting it. It's still not quite all the way there, but certainly those messages are a heck of a lot more widespread than they were even 10 years ago. So, you know, things like buying a dog. I mean, that just really, for a lot of people, they went to the mall. But, you know, through our puppy mill campaign, you know, we've really educated consumers to say there's a better way. And, in fact, you're probably going to get a better dog. You're not going to get a dog that's riddled with health problems and all of those things. You know, you can find a great dog in a shelter. So we encourage people to do that.
Yep. I support it 100%. I know when I grew up, you know, that was a number of years ago, so 40 years ago, we always went to a pet store because we never even thought about a shelter or the local group that was managing the dogs. But now, I mean, all of our dogs since I've been an adult have been rescues, and they've all been awesome. Love every one of them.
Well, and it's amazing how many Best Friends employees, in fact, have, you know, their first or even second or third dogs came from a pet store. My boss, actually, is one of those people who, you know, I mean, Jack's probably 13 now, but she didn't know any better. You know, she wanted a yellow lab, and so she went down to the mall and picked up her yellow lab. And he's been a great dog, thankfully, but she didn't know. And not long after that, started getting educated about animal issues and realized, like, wow, what did I just do? But, you know, people who – and she was an animal person before that. It's just that she didn't know. She hadn't had that, you know, received that education.
Yeah. So how did you get started with Best Friends? I mean, I heard you were in radio before.
I was, yeah, one time, yeah. I was a radio news journalist for almost 10 years. I worked I started out in Oregon and Portland and worked for a couple of stations there, including KXL, which is like one of the big news stations there. You know, and sort of worked on a big story that had some ties to Salt Lake City. So I'd done some stuff for them over the course of that week. And the news director at that station, KSL in Salt Lake, it's a huge station, called me and said, "Hey, do you want a job?" And I said, "Sure, snow sounds like fun." So moved to Salt Lake and worked for KSL for about 4 years. And then, you know, I was volunteering with No More Homeless Pets in Utah, which is another program of Best Friends that was really designed around trying to understand how to grasp from a community level of making, you know, a community no kill, or, you know, bringing about that time of No More Homeless Pets. So I got really engaged there, and I got to know Julie Castle and Gregory Castle, who's the current CEO of Best Friends. If I'm being totally honest with you, Terry, I got drunk at a fundraiser one time, and Julie had just started back at Best Friends and said, "You got to come work for me." And I said, "You know what? I think I've just about had enough of the corporate grind. Let's do it." So, I don't know how else to say it. I mean, I can't really pretty that story up. So I ended up in Kanab and started doing campaign work, and self-admittedly was pretty awful at it. It was almost 4 years ago, really, we're getting there. And the organization had no real organized presence, or, you know, no one was doing social media on behalf of the organization. And Julie said, "You know, this is really important." Like, this, and at that time, it was like MySpace. Like, no one was even on Facebook, right? You know, we've got to get going on this. And we had some great, like, volunteers and members and people who had just started profiles for us. But she said, "You know, we've got to do more, like, as an organization." She had really great foresight there to say, you know, how important the social media element was to what we do. And so, you know, she sort of looked around the room and said, "Who can we have do this?" And she looked at me and she said, "Well, you already spend all your day on MySpace, so why don't we just give you the job?" And I said, "All right." So the organization's been really great with me and invested in me, really given me time to grow and learn, you know, sent me to conferences, let me take webinars, you know, and really kind of grow into the position I am in today, an internet marketing manager. And so it's been really a heck of a ride. It's been a really wild last 3.5 years.
That sounds awesome, and plus you get to live in a beautiful area while you're doing it, so I don't know how you can really lose on that job.
Well, actually, I just moved, Terry.
I did
live in Kanab for 3 years, yeah. But, you know, as great as Kanab is, and certainly anyone that's visited the area will tell you that, you know, it is a very small town, very, very small town. And to be honest with you, I just sort of couldn't do it anymore. Just couldn't do it anymore. So I've got family here in Atlanta. My folks live up the road, and my sister's around the corner, and she's got a new baby. So it was just sort of a nice transition. And the great thing about what I do is that it can sort of be done from anywhere. And Best Friends, again, like they've always done with me, gave me a lot of trust, and just said, "Yeah, we're totally supportive of you moving, and we think you'll do a good job from anywhere." So I've been here since Memorial Day.
Wow. Well, congratulations. That's a pretty area, too.
Thanks. Yeah, no, it's great to be here. And, you know, one of the things I sort of really did miss from a community technology perspective in Kanab that I get in a place like Atlanta is being able to interface with other people in technology and nonprofit technology. So the things that I would go to a conference for, you know, like the nonprofit technology conference, for example, you know, I sort of get that year round in that, you know, there are people meeting in tech clubs and, you know, it's really a sort of strong point for me from a professional growth perspective. And I would encourage anyone, I mean, if you're into technology, it doesn't matter what level you're on. I mean, if you're just running an organization and you've got a Facebook page, but you kind of want some help with that, I mean, depending on where you live, chances are there's probably, if not a nonprofit tech club, certainly a tech club. And you should get involved in those because you can go interface with other people that, you know, do this for a job or hobbyists or whatever level they're on, and you can, you know, sort of work with them, and they'll help you, and you can help them, and it's a really, really great benefit of living in a lot of cities in this country.
Well, while we're kind of rolling into the social media piece, I mean, you were on the show before, and we talked kind of general about how rescues and shelters can utilize social media to help get animals adopted and fundraise, et cetera. So with that in mind, looking at what you've seen in the past year or so, what do you think's working?
Well, I think, you know, it's amazing to me. You were obviously out at our conference, not your first time. And 3 years ago, we sort of restarted the No More Homeless Pets Conference, and it was my first No More Homeless Pets Conference. And, you know, 3 years ago in technology time is like, it's like a century, you know. I mean, it's a really long time, but even 3 years ago, we really had very few people at our conference, you know, utilizing smartphone technology, for example. Very few. I mean, I remember doing my panel 3 years ago and asking, as I always do in my panels, you know, who right now has a Facebook page? And the room was sort of like silent, like you could hear crickets. And I said, oh, this is going to be a long hour and a half. But, you know, now, I mean, this is last year we actually did, my panel was a more advanced panel where we got into some deeper tools and some deeper strategies about how to sort of take your engagement to the next level. And I think that's really where we are. I mean, animal people, you know, I don't know that they're sort of known for being technologically advanced or really utilizing technology, but, man, all you have to do is really look. And there are a lot of groups realizing how powerful a tool the internet is, how cost-effective, you know, the internet really is. You know, a lot of smaller organizations, I think, I like to call the social media really the great equalizer. You know, Best Friends, I mean, we've got money, right? Like, we can do a lot of things. If we wanted to build out some crazy website, we could probably do it if it fit within our strategy, and we, you know, put money towards that. But a lot of groups that don't have a lot of money and are really trying to put money towards their mission, which is great, you know, and spay neuter, you know, they still need to get the word out because that's how you fundraise and that's how you people, you know, come volunteer with you because they find out about you. And no longer do you have to have a lot of money to do that. You know, and really to just be very sort of simple and engaging, it's not very difficult. It just takes a little bit of time and effort. So I think it's been really great and encouraging to see a lot of the smaller organizations really take advantage.
Yeah, I agree. I think that compared to just in the last year for what I've observed, and I've got maybe kind of a strange viewpoint, but I've seen in the Twitter realm and the Facebook realm the number of rescue groups, big and small, just grow astronomical. I mean, suddenly they're everywhere. And I think it's great. I think it's a great tool. Now, what I think I'm seeing is almost there's too much information coming across. So when I see tweets coming across, there's so much, and some of it is the same retweets over and over. So I'm having trouble sorting through it because I do try to read a lot of them. I do try to stay up on it. So what do you think the biggest hurdle that the groups are facing now from a technology perspective in using the tools that we've just tried to get them to use?
Certainly cutting through the noise is an issue. I feel this way about Twitter right now. I think, you know, there are definitely smarter ways to engage within Twitter. Just as a user, as a consumer of that information, me, John Dunn, you know, I don't sit there and observe my wall all day. You know, I've got searches set up for different things. And so you can sort of do it smarter, but I don't know that a lot of people do it that way. So how are you getting your message across? You know, how are your folks seeing what you're putting out? is definitely an issue. I mean, there's a lot of noise there. I think the biggest hurdle, without question for me, is the issue that we've got right now with cross-posting of animals. I think all you have to do is look at Facebook. Your dog agrees with me. All you have to do is look at Facebook, and you'll see that everyone cross-posts animals all day, every day, whether
right.
they're, I mean, sometimes rescue organizations, but mostly individuals. But there are huge issues. First of all, a lot of these cross-posts, these posts, are completely out of date. You know, I mean, I see it all the time where someone says, this dog is going to die tomorrow. Well, actually, the dog was killed 6 months before that. It's just a constantly floating around post. So there's no real validity to it. And the other is regionalization. I'm happy to see those cross posts and help where I can. But, you know, if I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, and this is a dog in Seattle, Washington, and it's going to die in 12 hours, you know, unless I just magically have a huge network of people in Seattle, which is very unlikely, there's not much point in me seeing it. So how can we better do that? And definitely there are some ideas out there. I think overall our data as the animal welfare movement, if you will, needs to get better. You know, we can't rely on Petfinder. As great as Petfinder is, it's reliant on the users updating their information and keeping it up to date, which is true for some but not true for all. So how can we really make this better? And I feel like I have some ideas about it, and sometimes I just don't know what to do. But I also feel like these constant cross posts sometimes really do turn people off. A lot of them can be kind of gruesome, certainly sad. and for people like, again, I mean, if it's not regional or, you know, the dog's going to die in 3 hours and I know I can't do anything about it, it's sad, you know, and it really makes people feel hopeless instead of really making them feel like they can do something. So I think we've really got to cut down on the cross posts. And that's not to say that they don't work. I mean, they do. There are definitely people out there who are involved in transportation. They're involved in pulling from shelters. Like, that's their thing, and that's great. But how can we sort of better enable those folks to really connect with each other that want to do it without getting everyone else, you know, turned off or just flooded? So I don't know. I mean, it's a very tough thing, and I think we'll all have to come to terms with it at some point.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because I know that there's times I see stuff come in, and because I'm on one coast and it's on the other, as much as I would want to get involved, there's not a thing I can do because I just have no connections there, and then the logistics of getting the dog from point A to point B gets complicated, and again, if you only have a few hours anyway, you know, then I feel bad. It's like, dang, you know, I wish I could help, and I think a lot of people are struggling with that same situation, and if you could do some regional sorting like you were talking about, that would certainly clean up some of that. I think we've got other folks that I've noticed with the right intention. I mean, their heart's in the right place, and they're really trying to promote a cause. But they've got so much of it automated that, you know, every, you know, three or four seconds, they've got a post coming up, and it's a variation of their last post. And it's, you know, they're really promoting this cause or this anti-cause or whatever it is. And that generates a huge amount of traffic in and of itself, and I frankly don't read a lot of those. Once I've seen it once or twice, I know what you're preaching, and I'm just like, okay, I don't want that anymore, and so I filter that out. So I think they're shooting themselves in the foot doing it that way. But I don't know what the real answer is either. I think that you know, I think Twitter's going to be around for a while. I think that there's opportunity, but, you know, is it the next generation or the generation after that of Twitter going to be the one where we can actually sort and really utilize this? And then do we have the users that are smart enough to implement all these filters?
Right. And I think there are definitely a couple of things that could be done. I mean, if you look at, you know, the history of social networking and the sites that we've gone through, whether it's like Friendster or MySpace or Facebook or Twitter, any of these things, you know, they're not designed for animal rescue, right? I mean, they're good messaging tools and they're good connection tools, and animal people have made them work. So if it was MySpace, you know, we're blasting bulletins out all day long, you know, or Facebook, we're either, you know, connecting through groups or pages or, you know, friending up all these other animal advocates. But again, not really designed for that. So I think there is a case to be made for an animal welfare-related social network that's easy for people to take part, that really puts like-minded people together that are working on the same things. I mean, if you're trapping, if you're doing TNR for feral cats, you don't really care about the pit bull that needs to be pulled. I mean, you do, but you're not going to be the one to take action on it. And, you know, if you're constantly getting flooded with things that aren't really about your mission of trapping cats, you know, it's really kind of pulling you away from what you're trying to do. You know, we've had the Best Friends Network. I'll be the first to tell you. I'll admit it. It's not where it needs to be. We're working towards trying to make it better, and I think we definitely can make it better. I think there's a lot of power in connecting people locally, and that's really the go local portion of the network that unfortunately kind of got lost in the mix a little bit, but we're hoping to really kind of turn that around and bring it back to where it needs to be. We want to make it easier for people to connect. We know you're already on Facebook, so why not just have that Facebook Connect button? That's all you need to do to engage in the network. So some of those things I think will hopefully help, and I don't know that it's going to be the almighty savior. I'm not saying that at all, but again, I do think there's a case to be made to really connect animal people on a better level. You know, and Facebook is really about that personal kind of I know you connection, and obviously a lot of people have sort of gone beyond that. And because it is that I know you, it is difficult, I think, for animal people to connect within Facebook. The new groups feature has some potential to do that. But we'll see. I mean, I think the great thing about social media is very organic. And again, in the same way these other sites and Facebook today, you know, we're making them work for us. You know, we'll continue to do that and they'll grow organically. And I don't have all the answers. I don't have all the ideas, but someone will come up with something really great. And it might just be the trick. But like I said, I think the data is another big issue for us. I mean, you know, we often talk in these general terms of 3 to 5 million animals are killed every year in shelters. Well, how many is it? I mean, there's a huge difference. I mean, 3 million is a lot. 5 million is almost twice as much. So what are we actually talking about? Where are they dying? Why? Who's dying? Are they pit bulls? I mean, we often, again, talk in generalities that pit bulls are often the most animals killed. And I think this is really something that technology can help us do, is really get that data where it needs to be. And we're sort of getting to the point now where I think – there's focus on it. I mean, I can tell you, Best Friends, we're working towards that. We've got a project that is really dealing with a lot of that data. So hopefully we can actually make some inroads there.
Well, that's a really interesting twist. So animal rescue as a data-driven exercise, and while I agree with it because I, you know, being tech guy too, if you have the right information, you can make the right decisions and have the most impact. So many of the folks in this arena are not logical people. They're emotional-based people. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I think if somebody like Best Friends actually has the tools and makes it easy, I think it'll work very well. But I think it's going to be tool-specific to get you know, all these people thinking with their hearts to really use this data and apply it where it can do the most good.
Yeah, and there are definitely communities where that data-driven sort of mindset is happening. I it escapes my mind. I want to say it's Calgary with Bill Bruce where they've done this. But, you know, really tracking, okay, what animals are we picking up from where? What are the issues? And really then kind of overlaying all of that data on top of each other to identify neighborhoods that need help. Because otherwise we're just sort of like, I'm sure I'm not the first to say this, and I know we talk about this a lot as well, but you know, I think as animal rescue people, we sort of go sometimes where it's easy. You know, I always relay the story that's not mine. Rebecca Gwynn with Lifeline Animal Clinic here in Atlanta told me this story. And she was driving through Decatur one time, which is, you know, there are definitely pockets of not such good neighborhoods over there on the east side of Atlanta. And she saw a sign on a fence outside a house that said, puppies for sale, P-U-P-P-Y apostrophe S. And she kind of went, you know, let me stop and see what's going on here. So they bring out the puppies, and they're, like, emaciated and just, you know, not doing well. She convinces them to give her the puppies. And then she took them back to her clinic, came back, and said, look, you know, what's the story with the parents of this dog? And they said, well, the dad, he's real sick. And she said, okay, well, let me see him. And they brought out the male dog, and he was covered in, like, burns. Like, he had no hair. He was covered in burns. And she said, what happened to him? And they said, well, he had fleas. And someone told us the way to get rid of fleas is to use Pine Sol.
Oh, my God.
Like the immediate reaction right there is, like, who are these people and what is wrong with them? But, you know, that's just a lack of education. if you actually think about it, they were trying to do the right thing.
Yeah.
Like, if they just had been armed with the right information and the right tools and the right products, you know, it would have been fine. They just didn't know. So they turned to someone else who didn't know, who gives them that awful information. And, you know, but that really, to me, just says we need to get in that community and educate people better, not prosecute them or, you know. They're pet owners, and they love people they love their pets just like the people in the suburbs and the big fancy houses. It's just that the big fancy house people have more education. So, I mean, all of those issues. And I think if you sort of look at that data in most big cities, you would find that a lot of the problems really are coming from those lower class, lower income neighborhoods. And how can we get in there and do it? Bad Rap in San Francisco does amazing work out in Oakland. They don't say, you know, we're only going to take care of pit bulls in the good neighborhoods, because they know there are pit bull owners, you know, times 10 in the rougher neighborhoods. And they go down there, you know, little white blonde lady, you know, in these tough neighborhoods, and they figured out, you know, let's take an Oakland Raiders player with us. And he's going to be the one to knock on the door, and he's going to be the one to say, you know, your dog needs to be microchipped, and it needs a collar, and, you know, here's how you walk him on a leash. I mean, really, like, thoughtful, amazing stuff, because it's a huge part of the problem.
Yeah.
We've totally, like, derailed our social media. Sorry, Jared.
No worries, man. It's all good conversation. But we are kind of running a little bit long. We're almost at 30 minutes, and I know attention span-wise, most folks are that's about their maximum. So what I'm thinking is maybe we could do another interview later on, kind of continue this thread, because I think it's great information, it's a good conversation, and people enjoy it. Are you, something you'd be up to?
Well, of course. I mean, there's a lot to be dealt with in this. I mean, I'd love some time to come back and even maybe just talk about some tips and tricks related to social media. So if you've got folks that are either individuals or rescues or listening that want to know how to do some of the stuff, you know, maybe we can kind of go through some of the things we talked about in my panel. I'm an equal opportunity sharer. You don't have to come to our conference to hear what we had to talk about. So I would be happy to do that too.
Sounds great. I'll work with your folks and we'll get that arranged, because I think this is great material.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, it really is the future. I mean, we didn't even really talk about mobile, but I mean, mobile, I saw a statistic the other day, I believe, and I may have got this a little bit wrong, but the mobile web usage, so people using mobile web, like on their iPhone or BlackBerry, will actually pass desktop web usage, so people accessing a desktop or a laptop in 2013. Mobile web usage will actually be higher in 2013 than using a regular computer. So, I mean, how are we really enabling people on the go to receive all this information and connect? And, you know, I mean, that's really the future. That doesn't mean you should run out and start, you know, create your own mobile application if you're a $100,000 animal rescue group, but certainly the mobile web really is the future, and how can we really best leverage that? So it's a pretty exciting thing, and it changes so quickly. We could do an interview next week, and it would be completely different.
Yeah. Well, I agree with that. I think between the iPhone and the Droid, that has made leaps and bounds, not only exception, but just breakthroughs in the way the technology is being utilized. So I can see 2013, absolutely, people will be utilizing those devices so much more than a laptop or desktop. It just makes sense.
Yeah, and it's easy. I mean, I'm constantly tied to my iPhone, not just work, but personally. And, you know, I'm always trying to think, like, how can we best leverage this? And I think there are some really great ideas out there. Again, this stuff isn't cheap, you know. That's really the biggest hurdle, I think, for an organization like Best Friends, is this stuff is kind of new and unproven. And, you know, how much money do we really want to put into something if it doesn't work? But that's really innovation. And so, you know, you may have things that fail, and that's not so great. But what about those things that really work? And so that's, I mean, I'm constantly pushing at Best Friends. Everyone's tired of me pushing, but I won't stop to really keep us driving innovation. I think we're an organization that is pretty good at that. So I think hopefully we can put out some things coming up over the next few years that really, really enable us to save more lives.
Awesome, John. Well, John, I will arrange for our future interviews, and we'll get some more stuff on there, because I think there's a ton of content we can cover. But for today, I think we're going to wrap this one up. I appreciate you joining us.
Thanks for having me, Terry. Always a pleasure.
All right. Take care.